Live from Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunications, this is a WILL special. Tonight, a conversation with University of Illinois President B. Joseph White. Your moderator is John Paul.
Good evening and welcome. 2007 was a monumental year for the University of Illinois. The U of I launched a more than $2 billion private fundraising campaign during the year. Chief Alinawek was retired. The university shares a $500 million grant with Berkeley to research clean fuels. A new global campus on the internet opened. Construction is underway on all three university campuses. Tuition went up again. The university will house a supercomputer 500 times faster than any other in the world. And on New Year's Day, 2008, the Illini football team appeared in the Rose Bowl, watched by more than 13 million people. Enrollment at the three campuses combined now approaches 70,000 students. There are almost 25,000 people employed by the university, and overall the operating budget approaches $4 billion. Tonight, a conversation with the man at the top of the university, President Joe White. This is the fourth year the U of I president has spent time with us here at WILL to talk about the issues and the university. He took over from James Stuckel almost exactly 4 years ago as the 16th university president. He is 60 years old, a Michigan native with a background in economics and business administration. President White is married. His wife, Mary, and he have two children and four grandchildren. Welcome, President White.
Thank you, John. Good to be here.
Joining me in the studio tonight to help question President White is Jim Dye. He is a columnist and editorial writer at the Champaign-Urbana News-Gazette, quite familiar with the university, its administration, and the issues and challenges facing the U of I. Now, in a few minutes, we will invite you to call with your questions for President White. We'll show you the phone number on the bottom of the screen at that point, then ask you to be patient until we can get to your questions. Now, let's get started. Well, President White, the university, nearly 100,000 students, staff, and faculty, everybody always in motion, three different campuses, now a fourth one on the internet. Something always is happening somewhere. 4 years at the helm. How do you assess the state of the university at the beginning of 2008?
I think the University of Illinois is very strong today. I think your characterization of the year as a monumental year is accurate, but what's stunning to me is nearly every year is monumental. Every year there are tremendous achievements on the people front, the academic achievement front, the capital facilities front, the research front, the arts front. So I think our university is very strong. There are always challenges and issues. Always my greatest concern is that we develop a great faculty, that we attract the most outstanding faculty here, that we enable them to do their best work. Because if we do that, then great students will follow and wonderful work will happen. So there are always challenges, there are financial challenges, but overall, I think the university is in a very strong condition.
Tomorrow's an election day in Illinois, in fact, in a couple dozen states. To what degree does a presidential election affect a university, a state university like the U of I?
Well, leadership matters. I think that's the reason we take, many of us, nearly an obsessive interest for this long, long period of time in the presidential primaries and the presidential campaign. Leadership matters. It affects all of us. It sets the tone for the country. Who we choose says something about what we value. And that's true of higher education. Obviously, I believe deeply in the power of education in people's lives. I believe deeply in the ability of knowledge that is produced through research to solve the most pressing problems that we're all concerned about as we look to the future. And so I'd love to see a deeply thoughtful, pro-education president who understands that our children are our future, and how we educate them, how well we educate them at every level, will really determine not only their future course, but the future course of America.
Do you take any cues from any of the presidential candidates that you've heard speaking at debates or talking about higher education at this point as to whether one of them would be better than another?
You know, I have to say, looking at things from my particular angle, I'm pretty disappointed that none of the candidates, in my view, speaks frequently and passionately about our children being our future, and about education, therefore, being the cornerstone of the future strength of America. If I just listen to the candidates talk, I don't hear that subject come up very often. I think considerably more provocative, immediate issues tend to capture the day. You know, the current state of the economy. Are we going into recession? If so, I'll save us, which I don't believe. So I think if we read their websites and we drill down, we can find something about education. But I don't think any of these candidates is coming across as a person who really sees excellent education at every level as the cornerstone of America's future.
You don't have any reason to believe that if Senator Barack Obama from Illinois were in the White House that he'd be a little bit more kind to the University of Illinois than not.
I'd be very happy to see Barack Obama in the White House. There are other candidates I think well of also. I think whether or not the treatment of the University of Illinois directly would occur is hard to say. But remember, our funding mainly comes from the state of Illinois. At the federal level, the big issue for a university is the research environment. How well funded is the National Science Foundation? How well funded are the health agencies? And I would like to see, therefore, for us, a very pro-science president, because that would help our research enterprise.
Jim.
Let's talk for a moment about one of your really signature initiatives, and that's the Global Campus Program. Mm. After you announced that, it went through some rather dramatic changes before it was approved by the Faculty Senate and the Board of Trustees. It started off, I think, maybe on a smaller scale than some people thought. Mm. How would you describe the program now? What kind of condition do you think it's in? And what sort of growth do you see in the future in terms of classes and students?
Well, the Global Campus is the University of Illinois' initiative to put us at the forefront of quality, high-quality online education. I believe that in a society where people do so many different things on an anytime, anywhere basis, and particularly where people need an education but they don't have the personal freedom to get it the old-fashioned way, come to one of our campuses, spend several years. They have family obligations, they have jobs, they have mortgages, and so on. I think that it's very important that we take advantage of modern information and communications technology to make extremely high-quality, U of I-quality education available to people online. That's the purpose of the Global Campus. We went through a very, very healthy collaborative process here in our community, heavily involving the faculty governance groups, heavily involving our Board of Trustees, in order to forge an approach that everybody could get behind. And I really value that. I think we ended up with a better initiative than the initial conception because of that consultation, so I feel very good about that. It took a long time. We got final approvals in early fall of 2007 to launch the Global Campus just 4 or 5 months later, January 1, 2008. We did launch. We launched our first degree program as a nursing program done through our top 10 ranked College of Nursing at the University of Illinois at Chicago. We have a couple of education programs also. We have 15 students who are now in those programs. We have 6 more programs scheduled to launch, 3 in May, 3 in September, in additional fields like business administration. And the inquiries, the interest in the Global Campus, which we track and measure carefully, is high. And I think many of those will be converted into applications and into enrollments. I think by the end of 2008, we'll have a pretty good sense of how it's going in Global Campus. I don't have any doubt that there is a need out there. I noticed that recently the Apollo Group, which is a private sector purveyor of online education, which, by the way, regrettably is the main alternative people have today. By and large, they need to get their online education from a for-profit company. And I think that's too bad because we're a real university. I mean, it was sort of funny last night at the Super Bowl. You know, they played it at the University of Phoenix Stadium. That's great, but the University of Phoenix doesn't have a football team. because, you know, it's not a real university as we know it at the University of Illinois. But I noticed that the University of Phoenix now has 375,000 online students. So there's no question that there is a need there. There is demand there. I want the University of Illinois, as we have throughout our 140-year history, to reach out and offer a quality education to people who have the motivation and the ability to get that education so it can be a gateway of opportunity. The thing I feel best about is all of our global campus programs are owned by our own faculty. They set the standards. They teach the courses. That's how we're going to ensure quality, because it's U of I faculty doing it.
You mentioned the main competition being the University of Phoenix and being a for-profit operation.
Yeah.
I think you originally, when you proposed this plan, had hopes that the U of I would be able to generate some additional revenue mm-hmm. from this. Do you still think that is a strong possibility, or do you think maybe it will just be break-even at best or even money-losing?
Well, it won't be money-losing. If you take a 5 to 10 year view, I think that we can generate some surplus from the global campus, but it's not our primary purpose. If you're a for-profit organization, and I'm a big fan of the private sector, there are a lot of things it does very well. Your goal is always to maximize revenue, maximize number of people going through your system, which inevitably means your standards are not going to be that high. You're going to charge as much as possible, and you're going to try to keep your costs as low as possible. That's not our model, and we never intended it to be our model. So I think there will be some surplus over time from Global Campus, but Global Campus is not mainly about money. Global Campus is mainly about extending quality U of I education to people who cannot get it the traditional way.
Is measuring its success by the number of students enrolled the only way for us to measure it?
Oh, not at all. Not in the least. That's certainly not how we measure success in our at the Urbana campus, for example. I mean, if we measured success that way at the Urbana campus, you'd say, well, this must be a stagnant place because we've had about the same number of students here for a long time. That's my point. It's not about growth. Now, from a small startup phase, we do want it to become a robust program with a substantial number of students enrolled. But to me, the important thing is, what's the graduation rate? That's crucial. An awful lot of these for-profit programs have tremendous input, but very low graduation rates, and that's a disservice to the students who pay their money in the early stage. Another one is student achievement. How well do they do academically? How well do they do in the job placement market? And there's another one for me, another measure of success for me, which is that I think that many of our students who are residential at the University of Illinois, here on the Urbana campus in Chicago and Springfield, I think they would like to be able to take a greater part of their coursework online. Why, when you leave the Urbana campus and go somewhere for the summer, go home and work, go overseas and have an international experience, why should you not be able to continue your education then? Why, when we send students to have international experience, should they not be able to take their courses from U of I online? I mean, I showcased a young man in my inaugural address, Jared Perry from Central Illinois, who continued his U of I education while on National Guard duty in Baghdad. Now, you know, that ought to be available to people. So another measure of success for me is, do we ramp up the capability of our entire university community to do quality online courses, not understand in place of in-person residential education, which is a wonderful privilege for both the teachers and the taught, but to supplement it?
There are stories circulating on the Urbana campus that there may be a name change in the work at the university to drop the Urbana-Champaign from UIUC. True or not?
Well, I think Chancellor Herman could best speak to that, but my understanding is that he's going in the direction of ratifying the name Illinois. I wouldn't really view it as a name change. I mean, to the world, you know, the Urbana-Champaign campus is the University of Illinois, or for short, Illinois. And I generally think when the world calls you something and it's a good name, you just ought to make it easy for them. So when I heard this, and I've not seen the detailed plans for it, when I heard that, you know, it's going to be less University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, it's going to be more Illinois, that sounded good to me.
But Chicago and Springfield would retain their UIS, UIC.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Right. Because, I mean, those places have really built identity around those names. University of Illinois at Chicago, UIC. University of Illinois at Springfield, UIS.
You don't want to be the Ohio State University, the University of Illinois.
Yeah, I think that whole the thing is kind of silly.
Okay. Actually. Okay. Uh-huh. Well, it's time now for you to call in with your questions for President White. Go to your phone, and you'll see the phone number at the bottom of the screen. It is 217-333-3495. And you can give us a call with your question. A producer will talk to you, ask you to hold for a minute while we get around to your question. So, in other words, now is the time to head to the phones. Question from Jim.
Yeah, you spoke a moment ago about the importance of having great faculty as the key to a great institution. How, in the current budget constraints, do you go about recruiting stars, and how do you go about protecting your own turf and keeping the stars that you have? And I understand you had a meeting with some faculty or maybe administrators a month or so ago to discuss this very thing. So can you enlighten us on that?
Yeah, I think first of all, I think that being able to pay properly is a necessary but not sufficient condition for attracting and retaining the best faculty. Faculty members care deeply about the academic environment they're part of, the intellectual environment. They care deeply about the quality of their colleagues, the quality of students. So actually, the foundation issue is for us to continue to be a big, deep, rich university with wonderful traditions and high achievements, including a history of Nobel Prizes, outstanding departments, and so on. That's actually more important than anything else. Now, with regards to money, the simple answer is that we have to always make the faculty our first priority when it comes to spending. I did convene what I call the Resources Summit of about 125 senior people on the 8th of December here in Urbana from all three campuses of the University of Illinois, and I said our purpose in coming together is very simple. I said we have had pretty good revenue growth at the University of Illinois over about the last 4 years, but I go too many places at the University of Illinois where I experience my faculty colleagues in various conditions of, I'd call it poverty, just in some cases, particularly in the humanities, not even enough basic support to be able to have funds to go to their professional meetings, to do the necessary duplicating and so on, to hire graduate assistants. So one form is absolute poverty. Another is relative poverty. We compete against some of the richest universities in the world. And sometimes our faculty colleagues just don't feel that they have the resources and the department chairs, for example, to compete properly. And third, there's perceived poverty, which is even if it's poverty at a high level, there's still a feeling that we're up against it. And what I said to our colleagues is, there's a lot of money in the University of Illinois system in total. We have to operate in a way that pushes the maximum resources possible out to the front academic lines, to faculty hiring, to faculty compensation, and to faculty support. I said that is our top priority. I think that's going to mean streamlining the university's central organizations at every level. You know, there are university administration central costs, there are campus central costs, school and college central costs, and I think we're going to have to take a careful look at what I would call the sprawl of the university. That is, are we trying to cover too much university with the dollars we have? These are difficult questions. I will only undertake them, I will only lead undertaking them with the rock-solid support of the chancellors and the provost and the faculty leadership. I've said to the faculty leadership, I believe this is the right thing to do, to push the maximum resources to the front academic lines, to the faculty. But to undertake these difficult examinations and questions, we're going to have to work together. And this is not about cutting jobs. This is not about big reductions. If you take a 5-year view, there's a lot of change in the university. There's a lot of attrition at the university. There are a lot of activities that come to a point where they could be terminated. There are other new activities that could begin. We have to take a five-year view and have a very thoughtful plan as to how we're going to ensure that we're absorbing new resources, not to support important but activities, but not ones that directly benefit the faculty, but to support the faculty. Because I always remind my colleagues, we're fundamentally here to support the faculty and students. That is the core mission of the university, and we need to put the resources out there.
Let me go real quickly to a caller, sure. A question from Alito, Illinois, about how the university spends its money. Line one, go ahead. You have a question for the president.
Yes, President White. I'm an alum of the University of Illinois. I actually graduated from two programs, and I'm concerned about the amount of money we spend on intercollegiate athletics. And, you know, we're in a situation where we're actually cutting some majors at the college, and yet we seem to have lots of money for some other things. And if teaching and learning and research are really our primary goals, sometimes seems to me that intercollegiate athletics is kind of the tail wagging the dog. And I would be curious as to hear your response, sir.
It's just a great question. I know it's on the minds of many people, so I appreciate your bringing the question up. Here's the issue. We say to Athletic Director Ron Gunther, run a high-integrity program, make sure that you are self-supporting. That is, I don't want you knocking on my office door or Chancellor Herman's door looking for money to support your athletic program. And by the way, we want to have winning teams to the extent that's consistent with having a high-integrity program. That is the AD's mandate for me as president from Chancellor Herman. Okay, no AD in the country has accepted that challenge any better than Ron Gunther has. And here's what I want you to know. There's about a $50 million athletic budget, and it covers all of the costs of all the sports at the University of Illinois, including, by the way, paying the salaries of high-priced football and basketball coaches. And basically the way it works is, the revenue that we earn, that the Division of Intercollegiate Athletics earns from football and basketball, pays for all the other sports, all the other men's and women's sports. Now, you might say, so that's good, right? They're on their own bottom, they're financially self-sufficient, they're not a drain on the university, and we have great athletic programs of which we're really proud, okay? So next you might say, well, why don't you tax them 10%? Why don't you tell Mr. Gunther to write a check for $5 million to the chancellor's office to help support the library? Well, the thing about that is already over time, the athletic division has had to make some difficult decisions about what sports to continue and what sports to discontinue. In other words, it really does take the revenues that they generate to have these first-class programs and to have the men's and women's team that we really want. So for me, as long as we have high-integrity programs and they're financially self-sufficient and there's a proper emphasis on winning, meaning compatible with the other values, the first two values, then I think the athletic director is doing a very good job. Final point I want to make. I understand it's very hard for people to reconcile. You know, how can you spend $100 million on the renovation of Memorial Stadium and yet have, you know, problems with the university library, which is one of our treasures? You know, how can you spend over $1 million on a football coach's salaries and yet struggle with some faculty salaries? And my answer to it is that the Division of Intercollegiate Athletics has a mandate to be financially self-sufficient, and they are. When it comes to the renovation of Memorial Stadium, they raised all the money on their own. The whole concept was create some premium seating, sell some seating licenses, and with the proceeds, renovate all of Memorial Stadium, which badly needed to be done. So the answer is that we can't just take money out of the Division of Intercollegiate Athletics and use it for these other purposes, given that I told them, you've got to be financially self-sufficient and run a first-class program.
Let me ask you a related question. kind of a sticky issue, I think, from the university administration. That's about the chief. Uh-huh. It's been almost a year now since the chief was retired, but that logo still hangs out there. In fact, there's a lawsuit pending regarding the logo. And some pro-chief groups are even holding tryouts to have a chief in line. So where do we stand from an administrative standpoint when it comes to the chief at this point nearly a year later?
Well, the Board of Trustees, as you know, took action to discontinue the performance. That got us into compliance with the NCAA policy. I think that was an important action to take. I think it was a very difficult decision for the board, and I think it was a very difficult decision for the an enormous number of people who really love that symbol. The aftermath involves, as you say, not surprisingly, some difficult matters. With regard to the logo, that's pretty simple. I think that this university did its very best to present a respectful portrayal for the 80-year tradition, and we are going to maintain control of that logo because we don't want it to fall into cheap, trashy use. I think that would be wrong. And to do that, the university has to demonstrate that we have continued control of the logo. Beyond that, I can't really comment because of litigation. On the issue of the tryouts, that is not being done under any official university aegis. This is America, and thank God, people have freedom. If they believe in something and they want to do something and they take their own initiative to do it, I may not agree with it or I may agree with it, but it's a matter of personal choice. People have said to me, you've got to stop those tryouts. The university is not sponsoring the tryouts. We're in no position to stop the tryouts. My own view is that, I'm speaking very personally now. I was there at the Assembly Hall for the final performance of Chief Alinowick. I thought that the young man portraying the chief did a remarkable job. I thanked him for ending that performance tradition with a lot of passion and a lot of feeling that meant a lot to many people. And I have said, and it's agitated some people, I think that it's important to get the conflict over this matter behind us. I think that it is in the interest of the university to do that. That would be my personal preference. And I know, you know, frequently when I say that, people say to me, well, that's what you want, but it's not going to happen. And I say, you know, it's America, and people have individual rights and more power to them. But speaking as the president of the university, I think this was a difficult matter, and I think it's important for the university to get the matter behind us and look forward.
Jim, I want to go to a question from you. We do have callers waiting. They'll get to you in just a minute.
Okay, let's stay on the subject of sports for just a moment. We talked about the renovation of Memorial Stadium, and that's just about done. Next on the plate is the Assembly Hall.
Right.
Will it be renovated, or will it be replaced with another basketball facility? Can you shed any light on that?
I need a recommendation, of course, from Chancellor Herman, and who is advised by Mr. Gunther. I've articulated a view, and the Chancellor and I have spoken about the matter frequently. I think the Assembly Hall is a permanent fixture, a proud and permanent fixture on the University of Illinois campus. I think it's an iconic building. I think it's a magnificent piece of architecture. I think it's just, when you look at it, I think it's just unbelievable to realize it's nearly a half century since it was built. Talk about standing the test of time. And yet, from a functionality point of view, it needs a lot of renovation. I mean, anybody who goes to our wonderful events there needs it, knows that it needs, you know, wider hallways and more restroom capacity, and could sure use air conditioning. I don't know if you sat in the Assembly Hall when it's, you know, 90 degrees and humid outside, but, you know, it's an experience you don't forget. So it needs some work. It needs a lot of work, and it would be very expensive work, and I believe that's going to happen. Is that compatible with building, you know, a purpose-built basketball arena? I don't know. Mr. Gunther is, you know, he's an impressive AD, and he, who would have thought you could self-finance a $118 million stadium renovation, and he's pulled it off. So, Mr. Gunther, if Mr. Gunther comes forth and says he really thinks this is what ought to happen, I'm going to listen very carefully and pay close attention to it, as I'm sure the Chancellor will. My own forecast is that the first priority for sure is going to be the Assembly Hall. Whether or not there is a separate arena for basketball, I suspect that's some distance in the future.
Let me get to a caller's question. Line 2 in Champaign, you've been patiently waiting. Go ahead. You have a question for President White.
Yes. I appreciate the conversation this evening. My information might be a little bit out of date, but I recall that the University of Florida was recently ranked number 13 in public universities, with the U of I as number 10 in the ranking. I'm recently from Florida, and they were talking a lot about comparison with U of I in order so that they could crack the top 10. Florida had a lot of goals about getting there. Does Illinois have any specific goals to retain its high ranking and even improve?
Yes, indeed. Chancellor Richard Herman has articulated in the campus's strategic plan the goal of being the best public research university in America. That's a very aspirational goal, a very challenging goal, because there are a lot of tough competitors. You think about an institution like the University of California at Berkeley that has a somewhat higher ranking than we do. But we not only have, as a result of Chancellor Herman's leadership, we not only have the aspiration of being the very best, we really have plans to back it up, and we're working very hard on the securing the resources to achieve that goal. The reason we're doing that is not just idle pride. It actually goes to exactly the matter you raised, which I appreciate, and that is, you know, the University of Florida wants to displace the University of Illinois. You know, they want to be in the top 10. Arizona State, out in what is now, I believe, the nation's fourth or fifth largest city, Phoenix, has an aspiration by the middle of this century of being the best public university in America. Across the nation, there are public universities that have targeted the great public research universities of the upper Midwest, the University of Illinois, the University of Michigan, the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and they've said, you know, we're in the in the fast-growing parts of the country. And, you know, they're up there where things are sort of difficult economically. And maybe we can make sure their best days are behind them, and we're going to displace them. To which we say, nuts, there's no way you're going to do that. And that's why, in order to remain in the very top tier of the academic world, which I think is important to all of us as a matter of pride, because the University of Illinois is such an important resource for the state of Illinois and the people of Illinois, we have to reach high, work hard, secure the resources in order to remain a top-tier university, because darn it, we're not going to let those guys displace us.
Let's jump to another caller, line 3, another caller from Champaign. You've been waiting. Question about technology, is that correct? Go ahead.
Yes, good evening. I, President White, I hope you would agree that the quality of the local schools are critical to attracting and retaining great faculty.
Yes.
What can the university do to help ensure that our public schools in particular have the resources and the technology and the expertise that will make them a selling point for incoming faculty?
Well, let me say personally to everybody listening and all members of the university community and beyond, I think we must embrace our public schools. The public schools, exactly as you said, are an absolutely critical element of the quality of our community. I've said, Chancellor Herman has said, that if we could say to people with complete confidence, come to the University of Illinois, live in Champaign-Urbana, pay your property taxes, and your kids will get a uniformly high-quality education in the Champaign-Urbana public schools, we would be unbeatable when it comes to recruiting. Because remember, we recruit people who can go anywhere. And a lot of them are looking for exactly what we have, a great academic community, a great intellectual and cultural and athletic environment, a really quality community where, you know, I have to say, I think we have a quality of life here that a lot of people think isn't even available in America anymore. at the foundation are the public schools. So I think all of us have to embrace those schools and do what we can. In terms of the university's involvement, I know that Chancellor Herman has ensured that the Urbana campus is extending expertise from the College of Education and other schools and colleges of the university in partnership with those schools, because we have a lot of knowledge and we want to help. Chancellor Herman and I have been working with a little group of leaders from different sectors, the healthcare sector, the education sector, the private sector. We formed a little group called the Quality Growth Group. We spent about 6 months thinking about the next 25 years in Champaign-Urbana, and you know what? We basically came away and said, the single most important thing for all of us to focus on as leaders are the public schools. And so we've been meeting with superintendents, the foundation, we've been meeting with them to say, what can we do? And we're forging a plan so that we can provide the maximum support, both people support and, to the extent we can, financial support, not direct money from the university, but in terms of drumming up support for the public schools. I think the public schools are the single most important element in determining our ability to attract and retain outstanding people to the University of Illinois.
Let's talk money for an issue here for a second. The cost of attending the University of Illinois keeps going up and up and up. In fact, I think the latest numbers for in-state tuition at the Urbana campus run about $8,400 a year.
For tuition, right?
Yeah, for tuition alone, which doesn't include housing.
You at least double that for total cost of attendance.
So how do you make that affordable to people who go, I want an Illinois quality education? How do you make that happen?
Number one, you remind everybody of something that most people know, which is that investing in your own education or your kids' college education is probably the single best investment a family can make. The payoff still today, with higher, even with higher costs, the payoff of a college education is tremendous over a lifetime. Much higher lifetime earnings, much lower lifetime unemployment rate, much more greater propensity to vote, much greater community involvement. Not to mention, the inherent benefits of an education, being an educated person and understanding the world and appreciating the world around us. Number one, it's to remind people of the value of investing in that college education despite the cost. The second thing is, fortunately, compared to the privates with which we compete, remember, we offer an education that is comparable to some of the best privates in America. I was on a public television show in Chicago not too long ago, and I had to defend the University of Illinois, call it $18,000 or $20,000 total cost of attendance. Poor guy from Northwestern had to defend a $45,000 a year total cost of attendance. So still today, and it's one of the reasons we're, Americans seek out value. We're receiving 24,000 applications for 6,000 or 7,000 positions in our freshman class because this is a great education at what is still a good price despite the rate of increase. The final piece of it is financial aid. There are a lot of families, particularly upper income quartile families, which is tens of millions of Americans, who can afford this education for their kids. They definitely can afford it. But there are also plenty of families who cannot afford it. They really cannot afford this. As a result, we have to, in partnership with the state of Illinois and the Illinois Student Assistance Commission, we have to provide financial aid. We've gone from providing virtually no University of Illinois-based financial aid from our own resources to providing over $30 million a year now, and it's all need-based. So that's the way you do it. It's return on investment, a reminder that a great public university education is still a good value, and financial aid.
Jim.
Well, we're back on the subject of money again, so let me just throw this one at you. Part of the job of being a president of the University of Illinois is being the fundraiser-in-chief.
Right.
I know you have some background in that, but could you give me some idea how much time you actually spend on fundraising, how important you regard it as to what you do, and how do you go about it?
Well, it's a very timely question because my wife Mary and I, had the privilege of hosting at the President's House over the weekend Manny Jackson and his daughter and Governor Vaughn. And we did it not only because I think the world of Manny Jackson, but because Manny has made a $2 million commitment to our campaign, a private gift to our campaign from his family, so that, as he said to me, thousands of kids in the future can have the experience he had coming from Edwardsville, Illinois, and having the U of I be his gateway of opportunity to a world of high achievement, which is what Manny did. So I probably spend, I probably spend a quarter of my time, I would say, on fundraising in one form or another. A lot of it is participation in the campaign. A lot of it is one-on-one meetings with donors. A lot of it is just plain saying thank you to people because, you know, most gifts that come in, nobody ever asks for them. You know, people just write those checks. They make an annual commitment to a scholarship fund or to a general fund, to a dean, a school or college. And in every talk I give, I always say to people, if I can only say one thing to you, it is thank you for supporting the University of Illinois. And the reason they do it is because they understand the transforming power of education in the life of a young person. It happened to them. They want it to happen to others, and therefore they're giving back. We're in a campaign now, as you know. We announced our Brilliant Futures campaign. We have a $2.25 billion goal. We are at about 57% toward our goal with several years left to go. We've received hundreds of thousands of small gifts and a few very large gifts, including an amazing $100 million commitment from Tom and Stacy Siebel. Tom's, as you know, a graduate and already gave us a gift of a beautiful building to house the computer science department. Maybe the final thing I'll say, Jim, is people sometimes said to me, how can you stand to ask people for money? I mean, it must just be the most uncomfortable thing. And it turns out that actually among the things I do, it's one of the things I enjoy most. And the reason is that when you believe in what you're asking, when you believe in what you're asking people to support, and I believe in the University of Illinois, I believe in the value of education, the power of research, I believe in the brilliance of our faculty and the futures of our students, to go to somebody who has the capacity to give and say, you know, how about the University of Illinois? Think what you could do for us. Think what you could do for our faculty and our students. That's not a hard thing for me to do, and a lot of people say yes.
You mentioned earlier the nursing program as part of Global Campus. We do have a caller on line one in Champaign that has a question, I believe, about the nursing program. Go ahead.
Yes. It appears that there's not enough money spent for the nursing program here in the Champaign-Urbana campus. The conditions of the building with the teachers, their salaries, and promoting the nursing program. As you know, we have a national crisis of nursing shortage.
Yes, right.
And I'm just wondering, is there going to be some expansion or more money pumped into the nursing program there?
Well, thank you for asking about that. At our last board meeting, our last Board of Trustees meeting, Dr. Ken Schmidt, who is a physician, a graduate of the University of Illinois College of Medicine, made a very impassioned speech to his board colleagues, which essentially said, we have five health science colleges at the University of Illinois: medicine, nursing, dentistry, pharmacy, and public health. Some are only on the west campus of UIC. Some are in other locations, including Urbana. As you know, we have a nursing program here. We also have a piece of the College of Medicine here. And what Ken said is that the nation is in crisis with regard to the supply of healthcare professionals. Parenthetically, let me say, every presidential candidate talks about expanding healthcare coverage. Which presidential candidate has spoken about the supply of healthcare professionals? Answer, none of the above, okay? And Ken said, we are in crisis with regard to the supply of healthcare professionals. we play a huge role in the state of Illinois in ensuring a proper supply of physicians and nurses and pharmacists and dentists and so on. And he said, we need a special effort to secure an additional $50 million a year in operating funds plus capital dedicated to the health science colleges of the University of Illinois. He persuaded his colleagues. As a group, they said, you've made your case, you're right, we are going to embrace this as a priority. So I cannot tell you that the money's on its way, but I can tell you that it is now an official priority of the University of Illinois.
Let me talk about money on the way. As of this fall, the residents of Lincoln Hall move out. The faculty, the staff, the students, and Lincoln Hall renovation starts. Yet there may not be money in the checkbook, right, to do that. How is that going to happen? How are you going to fix up Lincoln Hall without the money?
Well, I've had a little discussion with Provost Katehi and Chancellor Herman about that matter, because I read in, I don't know whether it was in the News Gazette or in the DI, but I read that, you know, this renovation was going to begin. So I made a phone call and said, where's the money? Because I thought maybe I missed it coming in. You know, maybe I didn't see that check for $60 million from the state, although I knew I didn't. And I want to tell you what they told me, which is that Lincoln Hall renovation will be a massive logistical undertaking because it's a huge building with an enormous number of classes in it. And so they have put together a plan to be prepared to begin the renovation of Lincoln Hall. But the renovation of Lincoln Hall does depend on financing. And that financing either is going to have to come from the state, which is where it should come from. This is the cornerstone building of higher education in the state of Illinois. Or ultimately, if it doesn't come from the state, I am insistent that we renovate Lincoln Hall, and we need to find in our own resources a way to do it. And I've spoken with Chief Financial Officer Walter Knorr about whether there's a way to do that. So I believe preparations are being made for the renovation of Lincoln Hall, but I don't think it's in the bag that the renovation of Lincoln Hall is going to begin in September, because we have to have the funds to do it.
So there's still a lot of uncertainty about that project, even though plans are in the midst for this fall when it comes to Lincoln Hall.
And that's good. I mean, I admire them for planning for it, and I'm extremely hopeful, but it's not in the bag yet.
If the money's not there, though, that would mean you would have a building on campus that wouldn't be being occupied, and construction work would not be being done.
Well, the starting gun has not yet gone off in terms of people moving out of that building. Plans are being laid.
All right.
Let me go to another caller, line 4 in Champaign. You've been patiently waiting. You have a question for President White tonight.
Yes. I would like to also say that living in the Champaign-Urbana community is a great joy. And part of that comes from the University of Illinois. It's really a wonderful place. And when people talk about where would I want to retire, I say, oh, my goodness, right here. So, but my question is about racial and gender diversity and how the university is moving along on its goals and perhaps exactly what are its goals. And I don't want to sound argumentative, but I'm talking to 3 white males, and I just wonder, how is the diversity doing here in the Champaign-Urbana campus?
All right. Thanks for your call.
Well, it's not so good at this table right at this very moment, but this is a very small sample. You would have to agree with that. I don't think there's any question. I look at these numbers frequently. I think that there has been steady progress, and I want to extend a lot of credit to Chancellor Herman and the leadership of the Urbana campus. I think there's been steady progress in the representation of African-American students and Latino students in particular, in the student body at the University of Illinois here. To me, the representation of international students, which is just enormous here on our campus, is definitely part of the diversity picture. And so I think the progress is quite good on the student front. I think it's more challenging, particularly in certain faculty areas on the faculty front. We are definitely dependent on the PhD pipeline in the sciences, in engineering, in the arts, and humanities, in agriculture. And you know, I've been in academic life long enough that I've gone from a time when we talked hopefully about maybe someday the pipeline will deliver more women and minorities to a time when it absolutely is. There's no question that it is. And we are competing for our fair share and more than our fair share of those faculty hires, sometimes with a lot of success in some areas, in other areas not doing very well at all. And then, of course, the next stage is the development and the success of those faculty members, because it doesn't do any good to hire people in and then not have them achieve tenure. So overall, it is a very high priority for us. I think good progress is being made on the student front, and I think it's a mixed picture on the faculty front, and we can never rest. We have to continue to do better and better.
The university's name got a lot of attention at the end of the year and the beginning of the year because of the Rose Bowl and the football team and Ronzook's team being in California. What does an appearance like that do for a university in terms of image and portrayal around the country, for that matter, around the world?
Well, the day it was announced that Illinois was selected to go to the Rose Bowl, was invited to the Rose Bowl, I received a call from a very, very successful guy in Chicago who simply said, "Congratulations on the $100 million in free advertising." That's what he said. It's big. It's very, very big. One of the thing I like about high visibility in these athletic programs, as long as they're high integrity programs, and that's a required condition, is that they, in a world where, you know, we don't advertise, that's not what we do. We don't spend money on advertising, and it's bad form to advertise. This is a way of reminding the world, we're here, we're big, we're consequential, and as I like to say, you know, we're from Stockholm to Pasadena, from Nobel Prizes to the Rose Bowl. That's what it means to be a big, broad university. You know, greatness in academics, greatness in arts and culture, greatness in athletics. It's all of a package, and I view these things as highly compatible and self-reinforcing. So I think it was a great thing for the University of Illinois. Everywhere I went around the country, people were excited about it. And the only thing you can do better than getting into the Rose Bowl is win the Rose Bowl. And then you get even a little more free advertising.
And you've talked to Coach Zook about doing that next year, right?
You know, I didn't need to, actually.
All right.
No. He's very self-motivated.
I know you're trying to, we talked a moment ago, you're trying to grow the size of the university's endowment. There are some universities in the United States, like private ones mostly, Princeton, Harvard. They're getting a lot of grief right now because they have these multi-billion dollar endowments, and people in Congress seem to be saying they're sitting on the money and they should be spending more of it.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that, and how big would the university's endowment have to be before you would actually get to the point where you could be criticized for that?
So far from where we are today that it's over the horizon. That's not an immediate problem at the University of Illinois. I will say, I want to be very direct about it. I am glad somebody's bringing attention to the ridiculous riches of the nation's top private universities, the handful, you know, Harvard, Yale, Stanford, you know, the 20 to $40 billion endowments for tiny institutions. Remember, Harvard has a $35 billion endowment for a student body that is about it's about 1/12 the size of the University of Illinois student body. We have $1.5 billion to cover about 70,000 students. They have about $35 billion in endowment to cover a few thousand. I am not enthusiastic about the federal government telling these institutions what they should do with our money, with their money, but it's not really happening that way. It all started with a guy named Ben Stein writing an article in the New York Times Sunday paper. He's a Yale graduate. He's a very smart guy, and he wrote an article saying, "You know, I woke up one morning, and I thought to myself, why am I giving money to Yale? I'm giving money to Yale because it's my alma mater. But you know what? They don't need it, so I'm not going to do that anymore." In fact, he said, "You know what? I really ought to do is give money to a really good public university. You know, that's where they really stretch a buck. That's where they really educate large numbers of people with quality. From that, oh, I'll tell you, the privates were really upset when that came out because, you know, it was very threatening to their fundraising ability. And not long after that, Harvard decided, and now a few of the other super elite wealthy universities have decided, you know, I guess out of that massive endowment, maybe we ought to be lowering tuition just a little bit. Because remember, they don't just have the huge endowment. They have $35,000 and $45,000 costs of education they're imposing on families. So I think it's a very healthy trend. It has nothing to do with us.
I've got to step in because we're out of time. So that will do it for our conversation with President White tonight. Our thanks to President White. Thank
Great
you very much
here.
For being with us tonight.
Thank you.
And please know we want you back next time, next year, same time. Thanks, too, to the News Gazette columnist and writer Jim Dye. And, of course, thanks to you for joining us tonight. Good night.